Hey Team Swimfast, it is Rory here, and I want to start off by saying thank you. If you're listening to this right now, you are a current client of mine invested in the process of becoming a faster, more efficient swimmer, and I am grateful to have you on the team working with me. Thank you for putting your trust in me. Thank you for showing up every week to do the hard work that I ask you to do. I do appreciate it. This audio file that you're listening to, podcast, if we can call it that, I don't know if we can call it that, but we're going to call it that anyway, is simply a collection of the four videos that I've put out through the month of December. I had a lot of good feedback from many of you thanking me and pointing out things that were helpful in the videos that I posted on the portal through this last month, but also recognize that you guys are very busy people. You've got a lot to fit into your day, and watching a video isn't always the most convenient way to consume or learn. So I wanted to create another format that would allow you to digest the help and guidance and advice that I'm putting into the portal. And so on a monthly basis, I will collect the four videos in an audio file and send them out to you so that you can listen to them when you're doing a long run, or listen to them on a ride, or when you're going about your weekly commute or your daily commute. Use them the time that you have, the dead time that you have while you're exercising or doing other things, as an opportunity to learn something about the sports of swimming and how it fits into the big picture of triathlon, the psychology, the physiology, and everything else that I ramble on about. So through the month of December, there were four videos that I put out. The first one was talking about the four reasons why swimming is so hard to adult learners. This is particularly pertinent to you if you are getting started in the swimming process, or if you're coming back from injury or time off, or picking up swimming again after being away from the water for some time. The water can be a wicked mistress. It can abuse us. It can toil with our emotions. And so this first segment right here goes into the details of why swimming is so hard to learn as an adult onset swimmer or an adult triathlete who's picking up swimming late in life. Let's get straight into it. Here we go. On four reasons that I think that swimming is incredibly difficult for an adult onset swimmer to get right. The first is because swimming is foreign to everything that you do on a daily basis. Since you were born and since you learned to walk, you have been interacting with gravity. Learning how to balance, learning how the laws of gravity work, learning how they affect the day-to-day things that you do. You understand very clearly that every action has an equal and opposite reaction when you are working in the space and planes that you work on a daily basis. Swimming in the water is completely different. We've got a limited amount of gravity. We're using our arms instead of our legs. We're using our core to balance, which is similar to what we do in land, but we're completely horizontal instead of being vertical. Completely different. I bet that if we had a sport that was done in space, where again there was no gravity and the laws of physics were a little bit different, that sport would also be incredibly difficult to do. So the first reason that I think that swimming is very hard is because the environment in which we do it is so completely different to what we work through on a daily basis. The second is because swimming is technical. There are elements of timing, connection, sequencing. All of those have to be mastered. They have to be learned and then perfected and then put together as a whole. And those skills are incredibly difficult to do when you become an adult. My theory on that is as we get older, we actually forget how to learn. Think about what you do on a daily basis and think about how often you have to do something that's completely new to you, something that's completely foreign that you have to relearn. And chances are it's not a whole lot of stuff. Swimming is probably, for a lot of the people that I work with, swimming is one of the first things that people go back to learning after they left university. Like from the day that we leave university, the amount of stuff that we continue to learn as we get older diminishes significantly. And swimming is oftentimes something that kind of reignites the spark of people learning again, which is one of the reasons why I love it so much. So number two is it's because it's incredibly technical. There's sequencing, connection, and timing that has to be learned and mastered. And most of us adults have forgotten the skill of learning and mastering something that has timing, connection, and sequencing involved. The third reason is a little bit psychological, and that's simply that the brain sees the water as a threat. We are not water-based animals. We are land-based animals, which means when we stick our head inside the water, we are doing something completely contrary to what our unevolved brain wants us to do. Now, there's two parts of your brain, your prefrontal cortex and your limbic system. Your prefrontal cortex is the most forward part of your brain, and it's the one that's been the last to evolve and develop. So it's responsible for logical reasoning and rationale, right? It's the thing that helps you think abstract, helps you put key ideas together, helps you get timing, connection, and sequencing right. That's all responsibility of the prefrontal cortex. The limbic system is responsible for your survival. It's the basic things that your body has to do on a daily basis, or minute by minute, second by second, to keep you alive. If you stick your face in the water and your brain perceives the water as a threat, when your prefrontal cortex goes into stress because of a threat, it systematically shuts down and your limbic system starts to take over. And that's a very clever mechanism that your body has to keep you alive. Stop thinking, let something that's primary responsibility for is keeping you alive, let that take over because you're going to do something stupid. So as the prefrontal cortex shuts down, your ability to focus, to concentrate, and to execute minute tasks, timing, sequencing, and connection that you need to get the stroke right, as your prefrontal cortex shuts down, those functions begin to diminish and begin to shut down. And so your technique begins to fall apart. So if we can get your brain comfortable with being very uncomfortable in the water and recognizing that it's not going to die and it's not a threat to your survival, your prefrontal cortex functioning stays open for much longer. And as a result, you're able to hold technique for much longer. That is the third reason why I think that swimming is incredibly difficult to do if you're an adult learning to swim. The last reason I think that swimming is difficult if you learn as an adult and you're coached by me is that my workouts are freaking hard. Now, that is intentional. It's not to crush your soul. It's simply that I understand that the physical, emotional, and psychological stress that your body will go through, or you will go through at the start of a triathlon race, is incredibly high. And my goal is to prepare you for that in a way that when you get there, you're so well prepared, you're so well conditioned physically, emotionally, and psychologically, that the experience that you have doesn't cause that prefrontal cortex to shut down. It doesn't cause your natural tendencies to want to slow down, to stop, to quit, to go into a panic attack to happen. The way that I write my workouts are designed to help you essentially fail hundreds and hundreds of times over, particularly at the back end of a workout, at back end of a main set. If I can get you to fail over and over and over again, we get adaption over and over and over again. And ideally, if we settle into the right pace, at the right intensity, in the right way on race day, you won't fall apart. You will excel. And that's ultimately the goal. Here's a bonus one. The last reason why I think that swimming is incredibly hard if you learn to swim as an adult and you're a triathlete is because you don't spend enough time in the water. Think about it. If you swim four times a week, which is on the top end of what most of you guys who work with me do when you're balancing life, work, children, swim, bike, run, gym, yoga, whatever else you're doing in your day, if you swim four times a week, you're literally swimming 2.1% of a total number of hours in a week. If you swim one or two times a week, one time a week, 1.1% of your total time in the week is spent in the water. Now contrast that with a pro swimmer. Something like what I did when I was swimming competitively, we're spending upwards of 30 to 40 hours a week in the water to master the movements, to get comfortable with the environment, and to build the fitness confidence that we needed to swim fast. We're spending 30 to 40 hours a week in the water, which is a significantly larger period of time or portion of time of your weekly available time than 1.1% if you're swimming once a week, or 2.1% if you're swimming four times a week. In the second video that I released in December, we talked about feeling your pace in the water, and I got a lot of feedback on this one. This is something that commonly is an issue for a lot of people. Without looking at their watch, they just simply have no clue of how fast they're really swimming. And so in this video, we went into a lot of detail about talking about what pace is, the stroke effectiveness combined with intensity, and redefining stroke effectiveness and intensity so you can kind of get an idea of how it fits together. Let's get into teaching you how to feel your pace more effectively in the water so that you can hit your goal times at the back end of your workouts like the champ that I want you to be. Okay, so let's get into answering the question of how do I know what pace I'm swimming at if I'm not looking at my watch? This is a very good question, and it's something that's going to come with experience. Now, there's a couple of elements that go into it that you can deliberately work on as you move through your workouts on a weekly basis that's going to help you get a better idea of what your pacing is. So let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. So basically, pace is the result of two things. One, your stroke effectiveness, and two, the intensity that you're swimming at. In order for you to be swimming at a fast pace, A, your stroke needs to be very effective, and B, your intensity needs to be up high, right? So pace is a relationship or a result of those two or a combination of those two things. The more effective your stroke is, the further forward you move with every pull relative to time. And there's no point in moving ridiculously far forward with every pull if you're going to slow down between every stroke that you take. So relative to time, the more you move forward with every pull, the more effective your stroke is. Now, stroke effectiveness reduces over time. The longer we swim for, the longer we move for, the less effective the stroke becomes. Now, that's not just you, that's every swimmer. Even at the Olympic level, the first 50 or the first 25 that they swim is always going to be significantly faster than the last 50 or the last 25. And that's simply because of the way the physiology works in our body and how fatigue and acidity build up. So it's not just you that has stroke rate or stroke effectiveness drop over time. That's a function of the human physiology. And that's one of the reasons why we train, to extend out the amount of time that it takes for the effectiveness of our stroke to reduce. The rate at which the effectiveness of your stroke reduces is a direct correlation on the intensity that you swim. And that's why the pace that you're swimming at is a result of both the effectiveness and the intensity. So to know what pace you're swimming at without looking at your watch, you have to have a fairly good feel for both the intensity that you're swimming at and the effectiveness of your stroke. Right, that's going to give us the picture of what sort of pace we're swimming at. So what sort of markers or what sort of metrics can we look at when it comes to stroke effectiveness that's going to give us a gauge on how fast we are swimming? Well, I think that there are two basic ones that we can think about. The first being the number of strokes that you're taking to get through a length. So there is a stroke rhythm that develops after you've been swimming for a while. You start to get a feel for the timing and the rhythm of your stroke, and that tends to have a correlation with the number of strokes you take to get through a length. So my suggestion to you would be this: count your strokes regularly, not with the intention of really trying to change the number of strokes you're taking, but if you count the strokes that you're taking every single time you swim, say you have a CSS set that's 1 400, 2 200s, and 4 100s, and you count your strokes all the way through it and you absolutely nail it. You crush your goal times on every single one of those, the 400s, the 200s, and the 100s. You have a fantastic set and you hit your goal times. And now let's say you're taking somewhere around 19 or 20 strokes per 25 meters as you're doing that solid set. Now you have an idea that when I swim at 19 or 20 strokes per 25, and, which we'll talk about in a second, I have X intensity, a certain intensity level, I know that I'm swimming at about this pace. Now, the next time you do a set, say you do 6 100s, 3 200s, and then 2 300s, a similar sort of CSS set, you're swimming much more strokes per 25 or far fewer strokes per 25, there's a difference in the number of strokes you're taking. You know that you may not be swimming at the same pace. Either you're swimming faster or you're swimming slower. So we have a relative marker that we're using on a good CSS test that we've counted our strokes on, and that tells us when I'm swimming at this many strokes in a 25 at a certain intensity level, I know that I'm going to be swimming at about X pace. So that's one way to do it, is based on our stroke count. And that just gives us a gauge of how well we're moving forward with every stroke. A second option that you can use is simply just how quickly the pool is passing underneath you. If you can see those tiles moving fast versus slowly, it'll give you some sort of gauge to how fast you're actually swimming. So the faster the tiles are moving out underneath you, the faster you know you're swimming. The slower the tiles are moving underneath you, the slower you know you're swimming. So that those are two ways to kind of gauge the effectiveness of your stroke. And that's the first part of the formula. The second part of the formula in gauging how fast you're swimming without looking at your watch is very simple. You can know how your body responds at different paces, how you feel at different intensities, then you'll have a very good idea of how fast you are swimming, right? We can look at things like breathing rate. How hard am I breathing in and out? How much air do I need every time I turn my head for the breath? That's going to give you an idea of intensity, how hard you're working. How high is my heart rate? How hard is my heart beating right now to maintain this intensity that I'm swimming at? Your breathing and your heart rate are linked very closely. So one or the other are both going to give you an idea. Or you could just look at perceived effort, which is basically a combination of your breathing and your heart rate. How hard do I feel like I'm working now? Oh, I feel like I'm working at about a 7 out of 10. Well, generally when I'm working at about a 7 out of 10 and I'm swimming with 25 strokes per 25, I know that my pace is around 2 minutes per 100, for example. By taking the relative intensity that you think you're swimming at, that it feels like, combining it with the number of strokes you're taking, and you're going to start to get a better picture or a bigger picture of how fast you're swimming without having to look at your watch. So those 5 points, your stroke count, the speed at which the tiles are going underneath you, your heart rate, your breathing rate, and your perceived effort are all going to give you an idea of how fast you're swimming when you combine them together while you're doing the set. Being able to do those, to count your stroke rates, to get a feeling of your heart rate and your breathing rate and put a measure on your perceived effort, that's the easy part. The hard part is being aware of each of those points as you're going through a workout. That's where the magic and the difficulty of being able to pace yourself without looking at a pace clock or a watch comes in. The more automatic your stroke is, the more comfortable with your stroke you are, the better feel you're going to be able to get for those different metrics. If you're still having to think about the catch, if you're still having to think about your hip position, if you're still having to think about the breathing position, chances are you're not going to be able to pay attention yet to those details and be able to gauge the speed at which you're swimming. But with experience and exposure and more practice, the better you're going to get. How do you know when somebody's mad at you if they don't say anything? The reason you know is because a good percentage, 80-90% of our communication is nonverbal. And as you get to know somebody better and better, you get better and better at picking up on their nonverbal cues. Well, pacing is exactly the same. It's kind of that nonverbal feeling that you get when you know somebody's mad at you but they haven't said anything. You get a feel for how fast you're swimming. You get a feel for kind of the intensity that you're working at. But in order to do that, you have to have experience of what different intensities and different feelings feel like. The better the experience or the more experience you have, the more effective you're going to be at gauging those intensities. So that's pretty much a quite long-winded way of explaining to you how to gauge your pace when you're not looking at a watch. If any of that doesn't make sense to you, leave me a comment down in the questions below. I'd like to kind of create a library underneath each of these videos so that future students that I have, future athletes that I have, can come in and watch these videos, maybe learn something from you. Maybe you have another tactic that you've developed that I haven't mentioned here, that helps you learn how to pace or helps you pace your workout. Put it in the comments below, or if you've got another question, put it in the comments below. I'll be happy to answer it down there or the next time I see you at the pool. But I hope that video helps you. I will see you next week. In this third video for the month of December, we talked about the difference between the 50 meter pool and the 25 meter pool. There was a lot of feedback on this one too this month. We talked about how everybody is slower in the 50 meter pool. Even at the elite level, you're looking at 2% slower. At an age group level, we're looking at about 2 to 5% difference in the two pools. And to put that into perspective for you, that means if you're swimming at a CSS of 200 in the 25-meter pool, when we move you into the 50-meter pool, your CSS could be anywhere from 203 to 206. So extrapolate that out over a 300-meter, for example. That means instead of having a goal time of 6 minutes for a 300, you could in fact have a goal time of 6:18 per 300 meters. That's the level of difference that 2 to 5% can make based on the pool that you're swimming in, which is a big difference and enough to crush a lot of souls, which is why I think there was such good feedback on this. Let's take a listen to what I have to say about the 25 meter pool versus the 50 meter pool and how that plays a role in your development as an athlete and how to use that knowledge to help set you up for better, faster race day swims. Okay, so why are you slower in the 50 meter pool versus in the 25 meter pool, and what effects does that have on the way you should be training for an open water race? Well, let's answer those questions. First, why are you slower in a 50 meter pool? Well, the good news for you is that you are not the only one that's slower in a 50 meter pool. Everybody is slower in a 50 meter pool. World record holders, elite swimmers, everybody swim slower in a 50 meter pool for a variety of reasons. And it's not just a fraction of a second slower, it's about 2% slower. So at the elite level, if you compare world records in a 25 meter pool to world records in a 50 meter pool, you're looking at roughly 2% across genders and all events, 2% slower in the 50 meter pool than they are in the 25 meter pool. So that's a significant amount of difference. Now, there was an academic study done in 2007 in Finland that looked at the physiological differences between swimming in a 50-meter pool versus swimming in a 25-meter pool. And if I pull up some of the results that they found in that study, significantly higher blood lactate levels were found in the 50-meter pool when compared to a 25-meter pool. Heart rate values were found to be significantly higher in the long course, the 50-meter pool. And maximum swimming velocity was significantly higher in the 25-meter pool, and they put that down to turns. So from a physiological standpoint, swimming in a 50-meter pool is more demanding than swimming in a 25-meter pool. And that study was done on elite athletes or very competent, highly efficient swimmers. So it's not just you that swims slowly in the 50 meter pool, it's all of us. So you can rest easy on that one. Now, that study and the world records are obviously looking at the elite, most proficient, most effective, most efficient swimmers in the world. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I am not in that category anymore, and neither are you. Pretty much no triathletes that I know fit into that same category anymore. So the slower you are, the more exponential the effect of slowing down is going to be as the distances that you swim get longer. The less effective your stroke is going to be. So that means that you're looking at more than just a 2% drop in pace between the 25 meter pool and the 50 meter pool. And there's two reasons why that's the case. Now, the first is probably because there are still fundamental technique issues that you have with your stroke. That's the same for me now. I've got fundamental technique issues with my stroke that are going to for sure slow me down. And the second is because my swim fitness and your swim fitness are not quite at the standard that they could possibly be at. Remember, the definition of swim fitness, or my definition of swim fitness, is your ability to hold position and propulsion in the water under a state of fatigue. So let's look at those two issues, technique and fitness, and why they are affected differently by the 25 meter pool versus the 50. From a technique standpoint, the first is simply balance and alignment. At any point in a length, the most balanced and aligned you will be is when you push off the wall. And when you are in a 25 meter pool, you have double the number of push offs a wall as you do in a 50 meter pool. So immediately you're starting every 25 meters in a much better balanced position, a much better alignment position, and that naturally is going to translate. So you spend more time in a better position when you're swimming in a 25 meter pool than you do when you swim in a 50 meter. Now, from a fitness standpoint, again, fitness is your ability to hold good technique under fatigue. So there's two parts to that: fatigue and good technique. Now, the fatigue part, I take care of that, no problem. We will write you some workouts that will put you under some stress and put you into a state of fatigue. No issues there. But the technique part of holding that technique underneath fatigue. That's where the difference between the 25 meter pool and the 50 meter pool comes in. And here's why. You build real fitness far more effectively doing short repeats than you will do swimming long repeats. That doesn't mean that everything that we do is short repeats. Just did short repeats all the time. You wouldn't have the distance tolerance to be able to physiologically hold the paces that you want to hold on race day, and you would feel more fatigued coming out of the water. So we don't do everything with just short repeats, but short repeats are far more effective at teaching you how to swim with good technique over long durations. When you swim in a 25 meter pool and you do open turns, which 95% of the swimmers that I work with do open turns, and I encourage open turns, not doing flip turns, so you essentially are doing many, many micro short interval repeats, because you get the short rest every 25 meters. So you get the short rest every 30 seconds or every 27 seconds. You're getting the second to second and a half break, which allows you to reset your body position, give your shoulders, your lats, just the short amount of reprieve from the work that they're doing. And then immediately the next couple of strokes that you take off the wall are more effective. So this means you spend more time swimming with great technique under a state of fatigue when you swim in a 25 meter pool. And all that means is it allows you to build better stroke habits, creating a more effective overall, more effective, more efficient stroke, because you spend more time with good technique under a state of stress and fatigue. And that helps you build better fitness, improves your technique, and ultimately, in my opinion, turns you into a better swimmer. Those are a couple of reasons why I like the 25 meter pool. So the question that's likely to come up next is, if I'm swimming an open water race where there are no walls at all, shouldn't I be swimming in the 50 meter pool? Shouldn't that replicate more what's going to happen on race day? Well, the answer is yes, but no. So yes, there are less walls. It does give you a chance to feel your stroke over a longer distance before those micro breaks that happen in the 25 meter pool. And if you've been coached by me specifically during the summer here in Dubai, and you're preparing for a race somewhere in Europe, you will know that I have encouraged you or suggested to you that you go out to a 50 meter pool like Hamdan or Fit Republic, put your wetsuit on, and get some experience going through some longer work to get a feeling of what that's going to feel like on race day. However, there is a big difference in the type of water that you swim in that has a very big role on how fast or slow you end up swimming. What do I mean by that? Well, salt water and wetsuits both play a big role in the buoyancy factor. And the buoyancy factor plays a big role in your position, and position plays a big role in how fast you end up swimming. So I've never coached anybody that has swum a freshwater non-wetsuit legal race. Those without a doubt would be the slowest swim times that you could experience regardless of your competency level as a swimmer. Saltwater with a wetsuit are going to be the fastest times that somebody can swim. Freshwater with no wetsuits are going to be the slowest times that somebody can swim. And the 50 meter pool is fresh water and no wetsuit. So it's going to be the slowest possible time that you can swim. So why isn't the 50 meter pool the most appropriate place for you to train and prepare for your upcoming open water swim race? Well, because for most of you, that's going to be in salt water or at least in fresh water with a wetsuit. So the 50 meter pool without a wetsuit is significantly harder than both of the conditions that you're likely to be swimming in on race day. And when you swim in the 50 meter pool, you're swimming with worse technique for longer periods of time. And because you're swimming with higher blood lactate levels, which is not the most appropriate way for you to train the swim, you've got a number of things working against you, in my opinion, when you swim in a 50 meter pool. Not even taking into account the psychological aspect of having to deal with the slower times and higher blood lactate levels and higher heart rate that you will experience when you swim in that 50 meter pool, and the effects that that emotional toll takes on your motivation to continue swimming. Having said that, access to water is not always up for free choice. If you only have access to a 50 meter pool, you're gonna have to use a 50 meter pool. That's the way that we're gonna have to work it. It's just gonna be a little bit more difficult. But if you have the choice between the 25 and the 50, I would choose the 25 meter pool any day of the week. I hope that answers the question of why you're slower in the 50 meter pool than you are in the 25 meter pool. I hope that gives you some idea of the correlation between the 50 meter, the 25 meter pool, and the open water. Twitter. No doubt there will be 100 questions on this. So whatever they are, leave them down in the comments below. Help teach somebody who's going to come along at a later date and watch this video. Let them learn from what you know and your experience. I appreciate you for watching this. In this last video for the month of December, which is actually getting posted in the first week of January, I'm talking about supplemental sessions, about why they are such a critical piece to your improvement as a swimmer. Talk a little bit about how I came about creating supplemental sessions, why those principles of specificity and individuality play into the supplemental sessions to help extract as much value as we can out of the limited time that you spend in the water. We also talked a little bit about deliberate practice, about it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. This concept of deliberate practice, which is actually a central piece to the way that I live my life, something that's quite important to me. And so that is some of my philosophy, my personal philosophy coming through in my coaching that you get to experience on a weekly basis. So let's take a listen here to the way that I explain supplemental sessions, why I create them, why they're so important to your progress as a swimmer, and how to make the best of them on a weekly basis. Here we go. All right, so let's talk supplemental sessions. Now, I've done supplemental sessions with my clients ever since I started programming for age group triathletes. I don't know really where the idea came from. It might not have been the smartest business decision I ever made when I first started doing what I do now, but I knew in my gut that just seeing somebody one time per week wasn't going to be the way to get results. So from the very first client or the very first triathlete that I ever started working with, supplemental sessions were immediately a part of the mix. So there's three primary reasons why I now look at supplemental sessions as the fundamental part of your progress as you move through this process with me. So the first is very simple. It's part of the principles of training of specificity and individuality. If you're unaware of this, there are principles of training that guide every coach's way of putting together plans and workouts for you. There are specific scientific principles that we follow. And two of those are the idea of specificity and the idea of individuality. And the idea of specificity is very simple. The more specific we can make a plan or a program to your needs and your goals relative to what you will be racing, the more effective the plan will be for you. The individuality piece is very simply that everybody responds differently to different types of stimulus. So one workout written for one athlete may have a completely different effect to the same workout written for a completely different athlete. So the more specific we can write a plan and the more individualized we can make it, the more effective that plan becomes at helping you progress and improve. Now, this is key for age group triathletes for one particular reason, and that is you have a limited amount of time. Because you have so few hours in a week to actually improve, we need to make the most specific and individual plan that we can to extract every little bit of progress that we possibly can out of you in the short time frame that we're given. So that's probably the number one reason why I rely heavily on your supplemental sessions to help you see progress through this process, is simply because it's specific and individual to you, and that gives us the greatest return on investment of your limited time spent on the water. When you're only giving me 2 or 3 hours a week, we've got to really hone in on your biggest issues, your biggest limiters, and try and make those stronger in order to get the progress that you want to see. The second reason why I really like supplemental sessions is a personal philosophy that I have about progress, and that is simply that deliberate practice significantly increases the rate of improvement. Now, this is something that I apply to my personal life quite closely. It's something that I've applied to the training that I've done as a swimmer over the years. In many aspects of my life, I use this idea of deliberate practice. How you practice is statistically important to your rate of progress. It's just not just what you do, it's how you do it. There's a researcher by the name of K. Anders Ericsson, who's somebody that I've been very interested in the research that he's put out, because he's interested in high performers. Two of the groups of people that he spent a lot of time studying are violinists and chess players, because of the amount of skill it takes to become a high performer in those two disciplines is incredibly high. And when he's asked violinists what the number one thing that they can point to that has helped them improve to the levels that they have, they always point to practice alone with very specific intentions. And in other studies he's done on chess players, the best predictor of performance in chess was serious study alone. In fact, amongst tournament-ranked players, it was the only statistically relevant predictor of overall success. The idea of deliberate practice is simple. It's the fact that you go in with a notion of actually trying to improve something through a workout. So this idea of deliberate practice and serious study alone, which gets significantly better results than random practice or practice within a group, is a personal philosophy that I have that comes through in the supplemental sessions and the way I ask you to do them. And then the third reason is actually tied into the bigger picture of triathlon. I remember the first time I ever went to watch an Ironman race live. I'd seen them on TV, but the first time I ever watched an Ironman race live was 2009 in Coeur d'Alene. I remember thinking to myself, this is not what gets shown in the highlights package when you watch Kona World Champs, or this is not what gets shown even on the live stream. What you see out on the course at kilometer 10 on the run is not often the prettiest picture. And if you don't have the mental fortitude to be able to deal with that alone time, even if you're not a back of the pack triathlete, even if you are a middle of the pack kind of guy, there are moments in every single race where you are alone with those demons in the back of your head that are telling you to stop, that are telling you to quit, that are telling you to slow down, that are telling you to make it a little bit easier. And if you're not comfortable dealing with those thoughts and are completely reliant on people around you to push you and raise up your energy, you're going to have a much harder time getting through any long distance type racing. So the third reason that I encourage everybody to do supplemental sessions and to do them alone is because I'm trying to build that mental fortitude, that self-reliance within you, so that when you get to the back end of races, you have it and you have the confidence in yourself to be able to go out and to finish it at the best of your ability. So that's how I ended up with supplemental sessions as the main part of your program, and the reason why they are such an important part. So the last part is how to do them really well. The way you do a supplemental session really well is the way that you should do every workout really well. There's a couple of things that I like to think about as I approach my own workouts that you could use to help you make your supplemental sessions more effective. So the first is to make sure that they are scheduled. And I like to try and make sure that they are scheduled as consistently as possible. If I look at my week, I try to swim, bike, and run on the same days every week, and I try to do them at the same time on those days every week. Now, I appreciate that that's not the easiest thing to do when you have a family, a job, and a whole bunch of other responsibilities on your plate, but there is a role that this plays. The other work that you do outside of the pool, the biking, the running, the other external factors will all play a role in how well you swim on any given day. If you always swim on a Thursday morning, for example, and Wednesday morning is always a hard bike workout, you know that consistently your legs are going to have the same or similar level of fatigue every Thursday morning after the Wednesday bike. Now, there's nothing that you can do about the Wednesday bike fatigue, but there's a consistent amount of fatigue every Thursday when you do your swim that you know what to expect. If you do a swim on a Saturday after a long bike ride, or if you do swim on a Sunday after a long run, the things that you do preceding the swim will have an impact on the swim. But if those things are always consistent, they're always the same thing every week, then you're consistently going to feel very similar in the water. If you're changing up, this week I swim on a Tuesday afternoon and this morning I did a bike ride and next week I swim on a Wednesday morning after doing a run on a Tuesday, there's always different variables that will impact how you feel in the water, and those different variables are going to make you swim at different paces, feel different things, start to question whether or not this is effective. So the more consistent you can make it in terms of the sequencing of your workouts, I always swim after a bike, or I always swim in the day after a run, the more consistency you have in the sequencing of your workouts and the days and times that you swim, the more value you're going to get out of each of the workouts. As I said, I appreciate that that can be difficult to do, but if you can't do it, recognize that there may be other influences affecting how well you can do your supplemental session. The second is simply to follow the instructions. Have a look at what I've written for you to focus on. Have a look at what what I've said is the key part of the workout. Have a look at any notes I've put in there for you on the drill set. Follow the instructions and pay attention to the details. For example, a set of 10 100s done one way versus the same set of 10 100s done a completely different way will have a very different training effect in it. So you need to pay attention to what we are looking to do. If you're uncertain of what those instructions mean, in the portal, if you go to the Start Here page and look at the bottom, all of the terminology and the instructions that I always use in the workouts are all explained there for you. So the second thing is follow the instruction. The third is to do the drills. Now, the drills are there for a specific reason. Remember, individuality and specificity. So the drills are there. I've put those drills in there, the ones that I want you to do for a specific reason. If you don't have time to do the drills and you're like, well, the main set is more important to do today, then at least do some drills or at least do something that helps set your stroke up right. So for example, for me, I know when I do the balance drill after I go into freestyle swimming, after doing the balance drill, my stroke feels really good. I've got a lot of clients that think that the human stroke is the one that sets their stroke up the best. Others that think the sidekick switch drills set their stroke up the best. Doesn't matter really which drill it is, but if you are short on time, at least do 50, 100, 200 meters of one drill to help set your stroke up well. Those drills are there before the main set to help get you moving in the right way. So number three, do the drills. And then make the goal effort and consistency. Consistency of your effort. Even if everything has gone to absolute shit on this day, make your goal effort and consistency. Try and put the intensity that you know you should be swimming at in there. If you do, you will get the benefit. And then finally, celebrate the little victories. Some workouts are going to feel really, really good. I want you to celebrate those. Some are going to feel really bad. I want you to put those aside. We're going to look at the long-term average, but celebrate the progress that you've made. I love getting emails back from you to say, when I did this last month, my time has improved by 15 seconds. My average pace has got a whole lot better. First time I've ever seen under 200 per 100. I love getting those emails. I love celebrating those successes with you. So that gives you an overview of why we do supplemental sessions, the value of doing them on your own, and how to make the most out of each of your supplemental sessions. You got a question about supplemental sessions? Put them down below. I appreciate you for being a client of mine. I appreciate you for watching this video. Thank you. See you in the week. I'm creating these audio files and these videos on a weekly basis to help support you guys in your journey of becoming a better swimmer. Now, I know that this plays a small role in many of your busy lives, but it's my way of trying to help support you in something that can be a very frustrating experience when you go through it. So I'm going to rely on you or ask you very kindly to give me feedback on how you feel about consuming this stuff, about questions that you might have that I could answer for you on this type of format. No question is stupid. If you've got it, chances are there is somebody else that I'm working with or will work with in the future that has it too. So the more feedback you can give me, the more questions you can give me, the better content I can create for you and the more valuable this experience is going to be for you. I do appreciate you. As I said at the beginning, I do appreciate you for being a client of mine and for trusting me with this process and the journey of you becoming a faster, more efficient swimmer. Thank you very much for that. If you have listened this far, I appreciate you. You are amazing. Thank you very much for the dedication of listening to everything I had to say this week. I hope your ride is going well. I hope your run is going well. Whatever it is that you're doing right now, I hope it is going super well. I look forward to talking with you again in the week. Have a good finish to your day. Ciao.